Hey friend, really proud of this Portfolio Career podcast episode with Yin Lin. Shout out to Tim Pierce for initially introducing us. Tim and Yin were both in Teach for America together. Yin is currently on the board of Teach for America. She's also the co-founder of SheWorks, a global collective of female leaders reaching 7 cities and 20,000 entrepreneurs. Following her curiosity and interest has led to some other great opportunities. Yin claims she got lucky to stumble into the real estate industry. She is now the founder of Sage Vacations. She's looking to build community with others in this industry. So head over to yinlin.org to learn more about Yin. She's been recognized by Inc. as one of the 17 inspiring women to watch and by CIO as one of the top 20 female entrepreneurs to watch. Her entrepreneurial journey comes out of necessity as her family immigrated to the US from rural China. She's a 7-time marathon runner and plans to run a marathon and climb a summit on every continent. Very inspiring. I've been updating my website as well, portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So please head over if you want to subscribe to my newsletter and check out some updates. Yin talks about what a portfolio career means to her, and I can't wait for you to hear it and to think about it for your life. So tune in to build and grow your portfolio career. And as always, let me know what you think.
Cool.
Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Dubinsky, is here with Yin Lin. How's it going, Yin?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to be here. So if we were to go to an event tonight, Yin, how do you typically introduce yourself?
Depends on the event. But usually it's, hi, I'm Yin, and, well, yeah, I guess it depends on the event. If it's a entrepreneurial event, it's, you know, hi, I'm Yin, I'm a serial entrepreneur, I care a lot about women entrepreneurs and creating equity in the ecosystem for women entrepreneurs. If it's more of a real estate event, it's, hi, I'm Yin, I own a portfolio of short-term rental properties by the Jersey Shore, and I'm working on some larger deals currently based in Memphis and Buffalo.
Okay. So clearly a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
I guess one place I'd love to start with is your motto of be uncomfortable. What does that mean to you?
So be uncomfortable means to me to constantly do things that push me into an area where I don't feel comfortable or where I don't feel like I know what I'm doing. I think that in order to grow as a human being, you always have to test the boundaries of that. And so I, every year, set goals that make me uncomfortable, and I make them public because that makes me uncomfortable, and other people help me stay accountable to those goals as well as support me in those goals when I share them publicly.
Okay. And so it sounds like you're hinting at, you know, community and group of friends there to support you. You have a very impressive track record of creating communities around you and stuff. I'd love to learn a little bit more about a couple communities that you've set up and that you've led. So like SheWorks, maybe could you talk to us about that company that you started? And
yeah, I mean, SheWorks started out of a very simple concept that women in tech were not getting the same mentorships or levels of investment as male founders in tech. And so we wanted to create a community for women to connect with each other so that we can share those resources. And it started as a brunch for a group of friends. And that brunch became something that we did every single week for an entire year. And out of that year came 7 global chapters and about 20,000 women who engage with the SheWorks community. And that really happened because we did more of what people were excited about. And the people who were excited about what we were doing came to us and said, how did you do that? Can you help us create the same community in our cities? Mm-hmm. And so we did.
Okay. And also in terms of being uncomfortable, you have a... You're pushing yourself physically with a lot of different, we were just talking about swimming and stuff like, did you grow up being very physically active and motivating yourself that way? And do you see a professional aspect to also pushing yourself physically too?
So I didn't do sports until after college. I, in high school, did all the academic sports, I like to say. So mock trial, debate, academic team, mm-hmm. things like that. And largely because my parents would work all the time, and so I didn't have anyone to provide me transportation at the end of the day. So I ended up doing everything my high school ex-boyfriend did, which were those sports. But for me, I got hooked after I did my first half marathon with a bunch of Teach for America core members, which I was doing at the time. And after the half marathon, I thought, wow, this is actually not that hard. Let me try the full marathon. And after the full marathon, I thought, wow, this is really, really hard. Why would anyone do this? But for some odd reason, I decided to sign up for another marathon the next year. And after the second one, I was like, oh, you know, this really puts me in like a disciplined state. And that disciplined state carries through in other aspects of my life. And I really like how it makes me feel. And so me being always wanting to make my life more purposeful and meaningful, I set a goal to do one marathon on every continent. And so since then, I've done that almost completely. So I'm doing my sixth marathon this year, well, sixth continent this year at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro. So I'll be climbing Kilimanjaro, resting for a day, and then doing the marathon at the base of Kilimanjaro. And so the reason I chose to do that is because for me, the marathon is no longer a challenge. It used to be that, you know, I don't know if I can finish 26.2 miles. Now, I know I can finish the race. I just don't know if I can finish it within a certain time frame. And so this Kilimanjaro challenge for me is, can I physically climb this mountain and then actually finish something that I know I'm fully capable of completing? Mm-hmm. And that is why I do these crazy races. To prove to myself that I can do it.
Mm-hmm. How are you able to design a career and a life to be able to train so hard for something like that? And also have such impact in the professional world as well. Like, how did you kind of set up this portfolio career, if you will?
I think I've been very lucky to, A, stumble into opportunities that have given me the space and time to do what I do. So I feel very lucky that I stumbled into real estate because it really has allowed me the freedom and time to think about what I truly want to do for myself and what helps me grow and live life to the fullest potential, which is what is most important to me. And, you know, the real estate stuff happened accidentally. The first project that I did was actually to set it up for my sister to run because, you know, we've taken very divergent routes in life and she has always had financial issues. And so I wanted to build another stream of income for her to allow her to live a very full and complete life without concerns about financial issues. But it didn't work out that way, and I ended up managing that first house. And then what happened was the returns were so great that I started talking about it with other friends who have full-time jobs but not the time or expertise to execute on the strategy. And so I started partnering with friends, and that's how I went from one unit to now 8 units, all single family, 3 to 4 bedroom properties that I rent on Airbnb.
Okay. And that's Sage. And yeah. And how you said 8 properties.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the average building size?
They're 3 to 4 bedroom properties.
Okay.
And the portfolio today grosses about $500,000 in revenue.
Okay.
And the next step of that evolution is really to do larger units. So I'm working on a 14-unit deal now in prime downtown Memphis, right behind the Civil Rights Museum. So we're turning that property into essentially a boutique hotel that distributes its inventory on Airbnb.
Okay. And you said that you kind of got lucky to get into real estate. So it seems like it was a good fit for your kind of skill set and stuff. Like, so Are you able to speak to an example of like a unique strength or a unique reason as to why, you know, you kind of said, I got lucky into this and then was able to thrive. Like, what do you think that you do that is some like competitive advantages or unique strengths that you have that other people may not?
I think generally curiosity to learn and grow. I think when I saw that this was working, I didn't just stop. I thought, okay, what can I do to grow this strategy that is working? And I read a lot from forums and I spoke to people who did this and I study a lot of different Airbnb listings. And so when I get into something, I really dive deep and I just immerse myself in that world. And the same thing happened when I was learning how to swim or when I was doing my first half Ironman. I remember I would like fall asleep watching videos to swimming stuff because I literally went from barely floating in open water to swimming half a mile in 4 months. And that was like one of the scariest things I've ever done because it wasn't something that I thought I could do. But I have proven to myself time and time again that I don't need to know how to do something to learn how to do something. And so that's how I approach every experiment or opportunity that I come across. I think, okay, if I do this, what will happen? And if that happens, then I do another experiment that builds upon that first experiment. And that's sort of how I approach everything that I do. Every idea, every initiative, every hobby even, you know. I started playing poker last year because I wanted a hobby that would allow me to bring together people that I care about, to learn about them in a different context, and to get better at reading people and learning how to constantly make calculated bets in a systematic way. And so what started as a hobby turned into something I started using to fundraise for charities I cared about. So last year I hosted an investor charity poker night where we raised $6,500 in one night. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. You know, how can I impact the things that I care about through a hobby that I really love and have grown to enjoy and get better at over time?
Mm. Yeah, and the poker was one of talking about reflections and declarations. I loved your recent, you know, 2019 reflection in terms of all the different projects and things that you're working on. Made it pretty easy or easier to prepare for this interview. But there also was two points that I really want to talk about. Was you said you look at you have two questions that you ask yourself for evaluating opportunities or evaluating things that you want to spend your time on. Are you able to speak to those two questions that you ask yourself?
Yeah, so those two questions are, one, will this matter to me in 5 years? And secondly, will this help the people I care about? And it's very clarifying because if it still matters to me in 5 years, then that means that I can withstand the challenges that come my way to actually accomplishing that goal. And it's worth my time and effort now because I will remember it and I will feel good about it later on. But mostly it's a question that allows me to get through difficult times, because if, you know, I come across a barrier and I feel like it's impossible, which happens, you know, all the time to all of us, if I can have that kind of perspective, then I know, okay, like this is the right path and I'm going to keep going because it's something that matters to me. And then the second part, I think, is core to everything that we do that has meaning and value in the world. We all exist because of the people around us, the identity that we have, the personality that we have, the dreams and ambitions that we have is shaped by the people around us. And so I think at a baseline, as a human being, the only thing that matters is our existence, right? Because we're human beings, we exist, and that's great, and people around us love us because of that. The second part of existence is, now that we exist because of all these other people, then we should help those around us to exist. And those people could be your immediate family. They could be your broader community. Like for me, it would be my immediate family, my mother, my sister, and then, you know, the Asian American community, the female community, and then the broader New York City Chinese American community, I think about how I can impact every layer of the community around me that I care about, and that gives me a lot of purpose in the work that I do.
Mm. And so, yeah, you mentioned with real estate, you were trying to get another income stream for your sister. And then I think also in that same 2019 post, you said you wanted to buy a house for your mom.
Yeah. So, you know, my mom has sort of been pushing me to do that for a while. And I didn't think that it was the best investment for the capital that I have at the moment. But I went through an experience that really reframed that, because now I think about it as, how can I help the people I care about the most? And if I frame it in that way, then her happiness and sense of security matters to me more than the potential wealth that could be created through another investment vehicle. And so it's a values decision. And I think these two questions really allow me to align my actions with what matters to me. And that's the value, really, of the portfolio career, too. It gives you the freedom to say, you know, I don't need to be working maybe 70, 80 hours a week doing something that doesn't really matter to me or the people I care about. I actually have the agency and the skill set to say yes and no to the things that I want to say yes or no to.
Mm. And if somebody was to wanting to kind of start or build upon their portfolio career, what would be some advice that you give, let's say, a college student, for example?
I think you'd think about what is the baseline income you need to survive. So whether that be shelter, food, clothing, and any other obligations that you have, I think you need to fulfill that baseline before you have the mind space and the freedom to be creative and to really dream big. So figure out how you're going to fill in that gap first. And then once you have fulfilled that, ideally you're doing that in a way that allows you more time to explore and experiment with other things. And because you have the baseline covered, you have the freedom and time to explore. So those experiments, you know, a small percentage of them might work. And those are the ones that you pursue and really double down on. And they may or may not, you know, become something big, but you know that you've chosen that path and you have tested them enough to enjoy the journey. And that's really what is important, right? That mm-hmm. you find something that you're really enjoying the day-to-day journey. Like I'm very lucky that, you know, today I'm spending less than 10 hours managing this portfolio of 8 properties, because I've created a structure that allows me to hire someone offshore to manage my customer service and to have someone on the ground to manage the maintenance and cleaning. And so I can start dreaming bigger, so working on bigger deals that take longer and have a higher risk profile, but allows me to grow and learn and explore all these other ideas that I wouldn't be able to with a smaller single-family house.
Okay. And some other organizations that you're a part of include Vital Voices and Teach for America. Maybe could you talk a little bit about those organizations and kind of why you chose to be involved in them?
So I started my career, the only job that I have since graduation was being a teacher with Teach for America. And I taught at an all-girls public school in East Brooklyn, special ed, grades 6 through 10, all subjects. And it was really, really meaningful. The most meaningful experience that I think anyone can have is to be a teacher, especially to students who have less than the average population. I didn't think that I could continue to create the change that I wanted to see within the classroom, so I left. But I still stay connected to the organization because I truly believe that if we can get enough ambitious, talented people invested in the issue of educational reform and these issues, that we'll start to create transformational change as a system. You know, TFA alums have gone on to be principals, school leaders, politicians and policymakers. And those are the people who have the power to create that systemic shift that I would like to see in the educational system. So I stay involved with our associate board, primarily in a fundraising vehicle to support the programs that we produce as Teach for America. And then...
Is that a big idea there, that you'd like to see transformational change in education?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an idea that, you know, TFA has worked really hard for the last 25 years as an organization to push forward and move the needle on. Obviously, it's a very, very complex system with not one solution or one angle that we can go after. And I think talent is all that we have in this world. And so if we can empower and inspire people and create a community to do that, then it becomes a mountain that we can move slowly over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you mentioned community, and I think that was another thing we kind of started off with. Like, what is some advice do you have for people that are trying to, I hate to say start a community and stuff, but it's starting to become a little bit buzzwordy, but you know what, but yet it's so important for the people that we care about to build a company, to build skills. What do you think that's often overlooked or is unexpected in kind of building a community?
I think building a community is all about organizing. And organizing is really hard work. Mm. It's literally herding a bunch of people who have unlimited amounts of opportunities and ideas and access to people to say, on this day, I will choose to be with you. And so if you think about it from that perspective, why would someone choose to be with you on this day at this time to talk about this topic? So if you can answer those questions for yourself, then I think that it would be a much more compelling argument for those people. I think you have to be very authentic in why you're organizing, because especially with the millennial generation and younger, authenticity is key. And if your why is not strong enough, your community won't last. And it's because you have to do it for yourself first. Because if you don't do it for yourself, you're going to feel like you're wasting your time and you're going to feel like you're focused on the end goal. And it's never about the end goal. It's always about the day-to-day, the journey, the people you're engaging with here and now. Because that is the only moment that we have. And so really emphasizing that will help reframe the strategy or the purpose of why you're doing that.
Okay. And then as you think about all these different projects and organizations that you're part of and kind of setting the foundation to be able to dream big, like what change do you think you're really trying to, we talked about education and stuff too, but you know, what kind of change do you think you're seeking to make over the next kind of 5 years or so?
I think that for me, it's really about how can I maximize my impact in this world through the resources and networks that I have access to today. I used to be of the mindset that like I can't create dramatic change until I hit, you know, this amount of net worth or exited this kind of company. Yeah. But I've really shifted that mindset because I think that was just a belief that I had in my head that really had no backing or proof, you know, other than the fact that, yeah, there's a small number of people that exit, you know, multi-billion dollar companies and are in a position to be very philanthropic and choose which organizations they work with. But I feel empowered as an individual to raise funds for organizations I care about and to help people realize that they too can do the same. You know, fundraising is something that I think is a skill set that everyone should venture to learn a little bit more about, because it's truly about community. It's about you believing in something and convincing the people around you that what you believe in is, it matters. And if you can do that, then you can make that happen for every other value or belief that you have in your life. And as a human being, that's all we're all seeking to do. We just want to exist and matter. And I want to do that for the purposes of making the world a better place. And equity in education and equity in entrepreneurship and equity and, you know, investment community for women is something that I care a lot about. And that stems from, I think, being an immigrant into this country and seeing, you know, all of the opportunities I have access to today that, you know, had I been in rural China in a peasant farmer village, I would not have access to. And so it's my goal to maximize everything that I can now that I have the chance to do that.
Having the empathy from that spot. And you, your family had a restaurant here, and that's, how did they make the transition from rural China to here?
Well, that's the thing, you just do. It's not like there's a training program or a class that you take and, you know, bada bing, bada boom, you know how to run a Chinese restaurant. So most of the males in my family came to the U.S. through what's now, you know, called snakeheads, which is essentially a human trafficking group that moves people from one place to another. And a lot of these people came from Fuzhou, China. And he was lucky enough to win the green card lottery and was able to petition for the rest of the family to come over legally. And like most other Fujianese people, he started a restaurant because that's the trade that people who come from our town go into. And that was my childhood growing up. You know, every day after school, weekends, holidays, I spent in the restaurant taking orders, you know, making chicken wing, peeling shrimp, all these tasks that I hated growing up. Now, you know, I appreciate the experience because I've become sort of a jack of all trades in the sense that, like, if I need to do something, I learn how to do it well enough until I can get someone else to do it for me. Mm. And so, yeah, I think restaurant life is the best training ground, actually, for a portfolio career, because you learn to do everything, and you learn that you just have to do it because that's what it takes to keep the ship running.
Mm. It's interesting. In college, I worked in a restaurant. So
there you go.
Maybe I was planting seeds. All right, Yin. And then when you think about kind of your career, and I know it's just getting started and stuff, but, you know, is there anything else that we didn't get to talk about today that you'd like to?
I think we've covered a lot of it. I would say I'm really excited to continue evolving my sort of physical challenges that I have for myself. So after the seven continent marathons, I want to do all the summits. And so summiting is a completely different skill set. But I think it's important that people, as in general, are conscious of what is challenging to them and evolve their goals as they evolve as human beings. Because the goals I set for myself 5 years ago, I feel like I've accomplished most of them. And so instead of just carrying through those goals and saying, great, you know, patting myself on the back, I'm constantly evolving them and being reflective about how can I push myself even further so that I can be a better person and support the community around me even more.
Okay. And then you mentioned goals, and I think, you know, it's the beginning of the year and a lot of people came out with goals and, you know, are really excited about the new year. What type of system do you have that, besides publicly announcing them, that really makes sure is that you execute on them and that you have the resources and the support to make it happen?
I think it's important to eliminate self-delusion as much as possible. And one of the ways that you do that is through reflection. And so I think the more touch points that you have to reflect on whether or not you're actually doing the work that it takes to reach those goals, the more powerful and happy you probably be at the end of the year. So my system is A, to review my goals on a quarterly basis, and then on a daily basis, I write a reflection, sometimes related to the goals, sometimes not, but usually some sort of reflection that allows me to go back and say, oh yeah, I actually did this, but I didn't do that because of these reasons. And hey, maybe this, you know, goal actually isn't what I want, and that's okay. I think you can be flexible, but you shouldn't be indecisive. You should make a decision, and then you should do the hard work that it takes to reach that goal. And if you're doing the hard work and you're feeling like there's misalignment, then change it. Like, there's there's nothing wrong with changing your goal once you do the hard work, but don't not decide and just live life as if, you know, everything is cool when really it's not.
And did that type of process, is that a new thing, or did, you know, Teach for America or the MBA, did any of these kind of...
I think Teach for America was very data-driven, and so we were expected to keep track of our goals. We had 100-plus different tracker systems, and so it certainly played a role in that. And TFA was also very much about reflection and thinking about the work that you've done. But, yeah, it's a combination of that and also just reading through a lot of self-development books that I've developed something that works for me, and talking to, you know, mentors and advisors that I really believe in, and just being very, very curious about, like, how do they set their goals and what do they do on a daily basis, and taking what works and what sounds good and adapting it into my own day-to-day.
Okay, great. And then if people want to support some of your many efforts, Yin, what's the best way that people can connect? And, you know, are you really interested in building a real estate community? Is it, you know, wanting to have people go summit with you? What would be some, you know, for people that are listening, what are some great ways to really kind of support some of your work and efforts?
Yeah, so I'm always open to connecting with people who have similar goals. I think that community, again, is the only way that we reach our goals. I'm on Instagram at Yinus, so Y-I-N-N-U-S. I'm pretty accessible there. Or Facebook, I'm really good at Messenger, so if you just Facebook me at Yin Lin and say where you know me from, I'll likely accept. But yeah, otherwise, you know, my website has my contact info as well, so that's yinlin.org. Couldn't get the .com. It's too common of a name.
But you're special, and this, I really appreciate your time here, and it means a lot to me, Yin. So yeah, thank you so much. And is there any last words or anything? Or?
No, thanks for having me. I think that, you know, we're all on this journey together, and that you should never feel like you can't do anything, because there's always people around you who care about you and who want to see you succeed.
Love that. All right, that's a great way to wrap up here. Thanks so much, Yin.
Thanks.